Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. So on today's episode, I have a returning guest, Kristen McGarry, who is a close business ally of mine, someone I've known for a very long time. She is absolute top tier in her industry. She's senior vice president at Pacific Life. And I want to bring her on today to talk about required minimum distribution planning. The shorthand for that is RMD, required minimum distribution. So we'll go through some ideas for planning around required minimum distribution. So Kristen, I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for inviting me. We have a great topic today.
Yes, it is a great topic because on one hand, there's a lot of people who do not, and studies bear this out, do not necessarily accumulate a lot of money in retirement. And much of what we'll talk about today will be irrelevant for them. But as a financial planner at Elliott Wealth Management Services, we work with a lot of clients that have managed to build a decent amount of wealth. Oftentimes that's in their pre-tax retirement accounts, often originating from their 401ks. And in a lot of instances, taking money out as you're required to do, so to get everybody on the same page, when you get to age 72, you have to begin taking money out of your pre-tax retirement accounts so that the IRS could tax you on the money. So for many people, this is a little bit of a nuisance. And it could also be even worse than that. It could be a little bit of a tax problem if you've accumulated a decent amount of money and are now forced to take money out and pay taxes on it. So we're going to talk a little bit about some planning ideas around that. By the way, listeners, it's 72. You have to take money out at 72. That's the required minimum distribution age. But that may sound unfamiliar because for a long, long time, it used to be 70 and a half. And there was some legislation passed at the end of 2019. That seems like so long ago, doesn't it? At the end of 2019, that pushed the age from 70 and a half to 72. So did I do a good job kind of teeing it up, Kristen?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about some ideas to plan around them. I looked at the research that Pacific Life put out. It's a great white paper or research report. But where do you want to start? Which one do you want to talk about first?
I think we could just talk about starting early. And when we talk about RMDs, a lot of individuals will just wait until they're forced to have to take the distributions. And with the rules changing with the SECURE Act, how your beneficiaries receive the proceeds when you pass away is different than how it was prior. And I'm not talking about a spouse. I'm talking about non-spouse beneficiaries. So one thought is, can we start taking some of our qualified money prior to 72, pay the taxes at our tax bracket, where we might have beneficiaries that might be in a higher tax bracket, and beneficiaries that will now only have a potential option of being able to take that income over a 10-year period. So one thought is taking, when you need income, take the income out of your qualified accounts. Granted, you're going to be paying taxes on them, and we want to be cognizant on paying taxes if that moves you into a different tax bracket or not. But taking some of that income early, maybe taking some of that income early and delaying Social Security and being a bridge for Social Security. Another option sometimes is annuitizing, which is giving levelized income, could be another option. But that's just one option out of the several options we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. So give me your opinion on this, Kristen. I've been in the business 30 years. I know you've been in the industry for a long time as well. For a long time, the conventional wisdom, I think appropriately so, was why pay taxes on money that you don't need to use now? The notion was that you'd want to delay taking money out of retirement accounts and paying taxes until you had to. And in some instances, that probably is still appropriate. But, and this is important, but if you've accumulated a good amount of money in your retirement accounts, delaying until you have to take money out may create a situation where you pay taxes needlessly, because that minimum required distribution or required minimum distribution might be such that it throws you into a higher income tax bracket. So planning is really appropriate here to forecast and map out if it makes sense to take money out for a whole bunch of reasons, like you spoke about, but especially because of taxes. It no longer automatically makes sense to wait until the last minute. Is that right?
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's why the planning process is so important, because as individuals listen to this call, everybody is probably in a different situation. So there's some individuals that should start taking earlier. There might be some individuals that might want to wait till 72, but the thought process, you're right, of just waiting till 72 now, I think isn't necessarily for everybody. Because once you start taking those distributions, that will affect your Social Security taxation. That will affect your Medicare payments. That could affect your property taxes in certain states. So there's a lot of things to consider.
There's a lot of variables, and that's why I believe I will stay gainfully employed. The role of a certified financial planner is to help clients negotiate through this decision-making, because what might be right for you, Kristen, and in your household may not be right for me. And if we line up 10 people, everybody's plan might be different based on their own circumstances, but you need to plan ahead for this type of thing, which is the theme of our whole discussion today. I'll also point out before we move on that in some instances, it makes sense to take money out of retirement accounts earlier for the reasons we spoke about, and then deploying that money someplace else, like acquiring long-term care insurance protection, perhaps, or acquiring life insurance to leverage your estate and be part of an estate, an improved estate plan. So you could also take that money out to fund a child's college education using college savings vehicles. So there's a number of ways that we could put that early IRA withdrawal, I say early, prior to required minimum distribution age, and put that money to good use. You see that in the marketplace too, right?
Absolutely. And going back to what you said earlier, I think your role is so critical, because everybody's in different situations of being a CFP and being able to sit down with your clients and go through everybody's different situations.
Yeah. Hopefully make a good informed decision that works for the individual's goals and objectives and their financial situation. So another common planning technique around required minimum distributions is related to Roth IRAs. And I've done listeners some episodes on this, in particular as part of the series I did with Nationwide Life Insurance, competitor of Kristen's. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about planning around RMDs using Roth IRAs?
We love Roth IRAs. So being able to take a traditional IRA, convert it to a Roth IRA, there's no RMDs on a Roth IRA. So you'd pay the taxes when you convert it, but then you would be able to take tax-free income. The conversion could create thresholds for Medicare tax, premiums on Medicare, but it's after tax dollars and tax-free when you go to take the income. I think that Roth IRAs are fantastic. It depends upon your situation if you should convert. It depends upon your situation if you're currently still working and not retired. Are you contributing into a Roth 401k or a traditional 401k? But we do love Roth IRAs, and we love being able to convert Roth IRAs. There was some proposed legislation talking about the conversion of Roth IRAs, but that proposed legislation didn't pass.
Yeah, that was part of President Biden's, when he was campaigning, there was a lot of talk that we would get some significant changes on this front. But at this time, that seems extraordinarily unlikely. And it's worth noting that with Roth IRAs, everyone, that if you pass away with money in a Roth IRA, the money will pass on to your heirs, whether it's a spouse or non-spouse, tax-free. That has a lot of appeal. And I'll say, Kristen, the Roth discussion is such an important one, because we're really in the early days of working with clients that are retirement age, older, that actually have some assets in Roth IRAs. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there simply wasn't that much money in Roth IRAs. There's way more money in Roth IRAs now, which makes the planning element so much more important. And looking forward, there's going to be even more money in IRAs for that retirement category of clients and consumers over the next stretch, that this is a really, really important planning area that's still rather early. I've been, like I said earlier, in the business for 30 years. The Roth IRAs were there and you'd put money into them, but there wasn't really any money there to plan around in retirement. That's changing in a hurry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the conversion part is tricky, right? Because if you're going to look at this part of the plan, and this relates to a lot of the things we're going to talk about, it often will make sense for clients to include their CPAs or tax preparers into the mix, because this is definitely, from my perspective, Kristen, an area where the role of the certified financial planner overlaps and is complementary to the role of a CPA. And if clients can have their CPAs and their CFPs working in coordination with one another, you could do some really effective planning.
I couldn't agree more, because the CPA is going to be able to sit down and determine how much should you convert without maybe putting yourself potentially in another tax bracket. And then working again with your financial advisor. I couldn't agree more. And I think with Roths, it's also talking about generations. So who are your beneficiaries? Is your beneficiary a charity? That might not be as important. If your beneficiary is children and your children are very successful in a high tax bracket, the Roth conversion could make a tremendous amount of sense. So I think that goes back to the value of what you bring to your clients and doing extensive planning.
Excellent. Excellent. So the next one I wanted to talk about, and frankly, this seems to be one that's overlooked. For example, I don't think it's really come into my field of vision much over the last couple of years, but it relates to the usage of qualified retirement plans at your employer. So can you touch on that for us, please?
Absolutely. And I'll be fair, this is probably one that we don't see as much, but it really could help somebody in their situation. So if you're still working after age 72, so you're supposed to take your RMDs, and your employer plan accepts rollovers, you can roll your IRA into the plan and then delay RMDs until the following year, April 1st, of when you retire, the year that you retire. So because you're still working, the government's virtually saying, if you put that IRA money back into your 401k, you don't have to take the distributions. One caveat is you cannot be the business owner per se. So this has come up in a few times. It has come up is have been a business owner that owned 90% of the business. Right. You must be less than 5% of the ownership of a company. But this is a way to push off the RMDs. And one quick thing, Chris, that I forgot to mention at the beginning, is the government changed the mortality tables this year. So at the beginning of 2022, the RMD tables changed, and individuals will now be taking smaller RMDs this year. So you might have taken an RMD last year, and now this year you're a year older and your RMD is slightly less than what you took last year. And I only mention that because a lot of listeners might be confused and thinking they didn't take enough of the RMD. It's just the government saying that individuals are living longer, so we want you to take less money on your RMD so that potentially you'll live longer and have more money.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. And I think moving forward, you're likely to see that continue.
Absolutely.
Life expectancies are definitely getting longer. So in summary with this, if I get this right, Kristen, is that if you're still working and you're non-owner of the company, you're still working and you get to age 72, money that's in your 401k or your qualified retirement plan, would not be subject to RMDs?
Correct.
You could postpone it. So does that count for like even 403Bs and 457s and things like that, retirement plans through not-for-profits? I would imagine so, right?
I would think so, but I would have to double check.
You'd have to check. But I mean, my sense would be they wouldn't treat them differently than folks working for for-profit companies. So I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I was thinking through that on my own, but I would imagine that they would count too. I would think they would have to. So I think that's a great thing. So as an example, somebody might get to 72 and they're still working. And let's put a story behind it that they might be playing catch up. Their nest egg may not be as large as they had hoped. And that's part of the reason why they're still working. Then they wouldn't want to take money out. They would want to continue to build that nest egg. And in that situation, they may take IRA money, move it back into their 401k, their qualified plan, to defer the time when they have to take the money out. And this is in contrast to the first idea we talked about, which is taking money out earlier, which highlights why you need to plan. I could see times when this would make sense and other times that this would be foolish.
Correct. Because in this one, we're thinking you don't need the money. You're still working. We want to get the tax deferral and we want to get the growth. So we don't want to pay the taxes on it. But in the first idea, it was about we have so much money in a qualified account. We're trying to spend some of it down.
Good. Well, hopefully that makes sense to everybody listening. I also found a lot of interest in the research that Pacific Life had sent me about selecting different accounts to satisfy the RMD. So just to set the stage with the listeners, is that the IRS, when they run the required minimum distribution formula, they just count all IRAs as one. They don't really care whether you have one or five or 10 or 12. It doesn't really matter to them. They're going to add up the sum total of your IRAs, run the formula, and that tells you how much money you have to take out. Additionally, then, they don't really care where you take the money from. You could take a little bit from each of them. You could do a pro rata. You could just take all from one of them and none from another one. They don't really care. They just want to make sure you take the proper amount out so that they could tax it. And so what Pacific Life talked about in the research is about selecting which accounts you may want to take the RMD from. So could you touch on that? Did I tee that up okay?
Absolutely.
Did I step on your lines though?
No, I love it. Could you take an RMD 1 year from maybe an account that isn't earning as much? And the following year, do you maybe take it from an account that earned more? Could you take a larger portion of the RMD or all the RMD from maybe one of the different solutions, Chris, that you have available, investment solutions that gives guaranteed income, and maybe allow something else that doesn't give guaranteed income to grow more and not take the RMD out of? Again, okay. If you had two different investments and one was more meant for income, can we take majority of the RMD out of that one and try to allow the other one to grow? So yes. I love the availability of having different pools or different buckets of money and determining where you're going to take your RMD from.
Yeah. Another example that I think is common in my practice, and just a hypothetical example, let's say a client has half of their retirement nest egg in a guaranteed account and then half of it invested in the stock market. And then in year one, the stock market does well. So now it's not 50-50 any longer because the stock market portion of the nest egg has grown faster than the guaranteed account. So it might be, 53-47% now. Well, then maybe we take the RMD just from the stock account to be able to get back to or closer to the original 50-50 split, returning us to our benchmark risk level. And then fast forward to the second year. Let's say that the stock market struggles and now it's 52 in the fixed account and 48 in the stock account. Then maybe you want to do it in reverse to go back to the 50-50. So there's a good interplay there in terms of the money management piece. That's really good point.
I love it because you're virtually rebalancing the portfolio.
That's right.
Distributions that they're forced to take. And I think that is the beauty of the RMDs, that you don't have to take it out of each individual investment. You can take it out of one specific investment as long as it covers the aggregate.
And I'm a big fan of complaining and criticizing and piling on the IRS and Congress. I mean, that's might be my favorite sport. But I think in this instance, how they run the RMD calculation for the IRAs has a lot of wisdom behind it, because it allows people to be flexible. They're not trying to micromanage that you have to automatically take money from each of your several IRAs. They're really only after the tax revenue. So I think they're smart in how they do it. And I might have just made myself a little upset in the stomach saying that. So we talked about this planning, and a lot of it, Kristen, up to this point has been tax planning, right? Should you delay taking money out if you can for tax reasons and lifestyle reasons? Do you take it out earlier for tax reasons and lifestyle reasons? And then we're picking, most of it's around that. There is one way that money can come out of the retirement account that can be done tax-free. And I've talked about it in other episodes of the podcast, and it's a major talking point with our clients. But I'd like to get your views on this. First off, what am I referring to?
So you are referring to charitable donations, or we call them QCDs, qualified charitable distributions.
So in a qualified charitable distribution, you could basically take out your RMD, satisfy your RMD, but instead of you taking the money and paying taxes on it, you donate the money to a charity or charities of your choice. Then you could satisfy the RMD. The money will come out of your retirement account. It'll go to the charity and you'll avoid taxes on it. It's not only your RMD, it's actually up to $100,000. So you could do a QCD up to $100,000, which for lots of people is above what their required minimum distribution is. And this is a really, really wonderful tool, Kristen, for people that have charitable intentions. They want to give money away. When they do it this way, using the QCD, it's much more tax efficient. What we want to do with our clients is, I don't want a client to say, Chris, I would like to take $20,000 out of my IRA, pay the taxes on it, take the net of that after taxes, put it in their bank account, and then give it to their charity of choice, because then they pay taxes needlessly. But one thing about this that's quirky is the QCD, you're eligible to do that at 70 and a half, not 72.
Correct. They never changed it when the RMD table changed to 72 years old. The other thing I would say about the QCD is, we're talking about, you could do up to $100,000. And a lot of our listeners might say, we're charitably inclined, but we're not charitably inclined $100,000.
Yes.
And the only thing that I would say is, most of our listeners probably donate money multiple times a year, and they might not even realize it. And it might be at their religious, where they worship. Maybe they give money every week or every month. It might be for a charity event that they love attending. And I would say, all of those different events will add up. So it could be something as basic as, I love giving $5,000 every year to my favorite charity, and we do it every year, and you're taking an RMD and you don't need the RMD, why not do a QCD?
Absolutely.
And no, I agree. It makes so much sense.
Especially that we both reside in Connecticut. So you have state income tax as well as federal income tax. So, you know, somebody with a more modest amount, you're right, I use 20,000 as an example, and the cap is 100,000, but take 1,000, if you're in the 20% tax bracket, which isn't that unusual, you know, you do a $1,000 donation, if you do it through the QCD, that'd save you $200. Now, that's not life-changing, probably, but look, if I'm walking down the street, I see $200, I'm going to pick it up, and I'm going to be happy, I'm going to be really happy. And it only takes a little bit of paperwork, not much at all, to execute a QCD. Let me ask you this. I find that this is really an underutilized tool, that a lot of people don't know about this. Is that your experience too? Do you think from your vantage point that this is something that is underutilized?
I absolutely agree. I think a lot of individuals don't know about it. There's a lot of individuals that give money out that would, this would make so much more sense to go this route. And it is really easy. The one thing about the QCD you have to be familiar with is that the money has to go directly from the financial institution to the charity. You cannot take receipt of the money. So that's the one thing you want to make sure you understand. But I think that there's so many individuals that are not familiar with this. I think it's completely underutilized. And I think it could help a lot of individuals and a lot of charities.
It's a major talking point for us, so that when we have clients that are approaching age 70, to gauge their inclination towards charitable giving. And no judgment, some people aren't charitably inclined, and that's okay. But we would rather them know about it and not use it than not know about it and be in a position to have benefited from it. So we try and communicate that. And it makes us seem smart with clients too. So that's a bonus.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up, you mentioned right before we started recording the interview, Kristen, that there was one other thing that you wanted to mention that wasn't in the research that I looked at. And you wanted to touch on it, just like a 30,000 foot view of it. Can you tell us what you were thinking about?
Yeah, so it's called QLACS, and it came out under the Obama administration. And the thought process was there are a lot of people that don't need their RMDs, but are concerned about outliving their money in latter years. So the QLACS stand for Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, and it allows an individual to put $135,000 or 25% of their IRA money, whatever's less, into one of these vehicles. These vehicles will then push off the RMD for that specific money, so for that $135,000, till age 85. And then at age 85, you will annuitize that contract and take lifetime income that will suffice the RMDs for the $135,000. So if somebody is listening to our podcast and this is of interest to you, I would ask that you reach out to Chris and have a conversation to see if it makes sense for you. It's a way to push off the RMD to latter years. On that $135,000, you are not avoiding the RMD, but you're just pushing it off that you can have more income in your latter years if you have healthcare costs or potentially maybe if you don't have enough other asset pool.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that it's a tool to be used most often when someone is worried about running out of money? And this is a way to add some protection in the out years of their life expectancy.
Absolutely. It would be for somebody that doesn't need the income now, but really concerned about running out of money in their mid, late 80s, early 90s. Yep.
I'm glad you added that to the discussion. And as you could see, listeners, there's a whole bunch of this stuff. And she and I, being two financial geeks, could really get into the weeds on some of these different planning scenarios. But we wanted to give you just a brief overview. I think things to consider as you approach your mid to late 60s, maybe even earlier, is what are your personal needs and circumstances? You want to have a plan around your required minimum distributions well before you get there. Because if you wait until the last moment, options that were available earlier are no longer available. So you want to plan ahead. Surprise, the certified financial planner is suggesting you plan ahead, but it's really good advice. We do a lot of it here at Elliott Wealth Management. I know Kristen, as she works with other professionals like me, as a representative of Pacific Life, works on this all the time. It's very important. And I think one key takeaway is that if you don't plan, kind of the system is rigged against you, and you're likely to end up with an unfortunate outcome, because it seems to me some of these rules in the system sort of prey upon people that don't pay attention, and don't fall victim to that. Do some planning. We could help you out. Go to your tax professional, your financial advisor, research online, go to my website, and I'll do a meeting with you. But Kristen, it was a good discussion as always. I want to thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it today.
So listeners, I already made a pretty good pitch. You could go to my website, sign up for a complimentary consultation. If you're a client or if you're not a client, that would be welcome. It's ElliottWealth.com. And also subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. That would be great. And once again, Kristen, thank you.
Thank you.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.